What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. Residents in Florida are boarding up windows in anticipation of Hurricane Hermine, which continues to strengthen as it nears the Florida Gulf Coast. Governor Rick Scott warned residents to make sure they have enough food, water, and medicine.
We have not had a hurricane in years. So many people have moved to our state, and we always have visitors. This storm, hurricane, is life-threatening.
The storm is expected to push up the east coast of the United States with drenching rain and deadly flooding. Donald Trump is continuing to stress his America First approach. Speaking in a rally in Wilmington, Ohio, Trump says as president, he would treat everyone with dignity and respect, but says our greatest compassion will be for the American citizen.
We will defend our freedom, our jobs, and our economic independence. It's going to be America first.
Meanwhile, Vice President Joe Biden campaigning for Hillary Clinton Thursday, telling members of the United Auto Workers Union in Ohio that Trump thinks they earn too much money.
No, I'm not supposed to get angry, but I'm so sick and tired of hearing people like Trump and the Chamber of Commerce, the National Chamber, talking about we get paid too much, that we don't want. Give me a break. Give me a break. This is a guy born with a civil spoon in his mouth that now he's choking on because his foot's in his mouth along with the spoon.
Well, it is the second time President or Vice President Joe Biden has campaigned for Hillary Clinton. On Wall Street, the Dow closed the first day of September up 16 points. You're listening to VOA News. An unmanned SpaceX rocket exploded on its launch pad in the U.S. state of Florida Thursday morning. NASA said SpaceX was testing the rocket when a series of blasts rocked the site, shaking buildings several kilometers away. Webcam video showed a large plume of smoke at the launch site. No one was injured, but the rocket and a satellite on board were destroyed, according to SpaceX. Authorities said the test was part of the preparations for a launch this Saturday of a rocket carrying an Israeli communications satellite. The explosion marks a major setback for both SpaceX and NASA, which uses this kind of rocket to launch supplies to the International Space Station. Halfway between east and west, President Barack Obama traveled Thursday to one of the most remote corners of the Pacific Ocean to amplify his call for global action on environmental protection. Few Americans have ever visited Midway Atoll, a far-flung speck of coral reef with black-footed albatrosses and spinner dolphins, and that's exactly Obama's point.
Few people understand, I think, the stakes better than our Pacific Island leaders, because they're seeing already the impact. Rising temperatures and sea levels pose an existential threat to your countries. And while some members of the U.S. Congress still seem to be debating whether climate change is real or not, many of you are already planning for new places for your people to live.
Well, as he nears the ends of his presidency, he has sought to use the wonder of natural treasures to instill his pleas for climate action and conservation with a sense of real-life urgency. Air Force One landed on an airstrip that gained prominence half a century ago in the Battle of Midway, became a turning point in World War II. Obama's first stop was the small visitor center where U.S. Fish and Wildlife officials briefed him on Midway's wildlife refuge. During his afternoon tour, the president hoped to go snorkeling if weather permitted. U.S. auto sales of new cars and trucks fell in August, ending summer on a low note for the auto industry and making it less likely that this year's auto sales will match the record set in 2015. General Motors sales dropped 5% from last August, while Ford sales were down 8%. Overall, industry sales dropped 4%. Total sales through August are up less than 1% over last year. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, in for James Batty. And today is Friday, September 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. Gabon's interior minister says that more than 1,000 people have been arrested since the capital erupted in violence on Wednesday after officials announced a re-election of President Ali Bongo. In Washington, the State Department argued all sides to come together peacefully to avoid future unrest.
We are encouraging the government of Gabon to release the individual polling station results. We are asking that the legal procedures for certification of the results be followed according to Gabonese law in a fair and transparent
way. U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby. And human rights activists accuse Syria and Yemen of illegally using cluster munitions in violation of an international treaty. And three Zambian church groups are calling for peace ahead of an anticipated court ruling on the opposition's challenge to the results of the August 11th presidential election.
And in that statement, we did make an appeal for people to be calm and to wait patiently for the expected ruling.
Father Cleophas Lungu is the General Secretary of the Catholic Bishops Conference. These stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. Violent clashes erupted in Gabon's capital after the Electoral Commission said incumbent President Ali Bongo had been re-elected. Soon after the outcome was announced, protesters attacked the National Assembly in the capital, Libreville, and later in the night, government forces stormed the headquarters of opposition leader Jean Ping. Emily Yob has the latest.
Government forces said they assaulted the headquarters of political opponent Jean Ping to arrest the people responsible for setting fire to the National Assembly building. Protesters took to the street Wednesday, soon after the National Electoral Commission said incumbent President Ali Bongo won Saturday's elections with 49.8% of the vote, defeating his main rival, Jean Ping, by a little more than 5,000 votes nationally. In Bongo's stronghold province, Oouge, the official result showed that 95% of the voters cast their ballot in favor of Bongo, and the voter turnout was 99%. The opposition says these numbers are not credible. Serge Maurice Mabiela, a former minister and current member of Ping's campaign, says that they demand the ballot to be recounted so that all the light is shed on what they consider a political holdup. Ali Bongo is the son of former President Omar Bongo, who ruled the country for over four decades until his death in 2009. Later that year, his son took over after winning a controversial election, which was also marred by post-election violence and accusations of fraud. 7 years later, the oil-dependent economy is hurting from the slumping oil prices and social discontent is growing. Paul Melly, Central Africa analyst at the London-based Chatham House, says the stakes are high.
In effect, the voters were being asked, are you happy to continue with the continuation of rule by a member of the Bongo family, or do you think that Gabon should make this step of breaking with the Bongo and having as president somebody who's not from that family?
Opposition leader Jean Ping, a former ally of Bongo's father and a former government minister, turned to the opposition in 2014 and says he wants to restore individual freedoms and democracy.
That's why the stakes were much higher in this election and why there's a lot more emotion and pressure behind it. And so there is a risk that the tension, instability, possible violence could continue for some time.
France, the European Union, and the United States have called on Gabon's government to release results from each polling station and said that anyone wishing to challenge the result must do so peacefully through Gabon's legal system. Emily Yap for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Gabon's interior minister says that more than 1,000 people have been arrested since the capital erupted in violence on Wednesday. On Thursday, police patrolled the streets of Libreville after a night of clashes in which demonstrators set fire to the National Assembly and buildings nearby, and government forces stormed the headquarters of the opposition. In Washington, the State Department argued all sides to come together peacefully to avoid future unrest, while not ruling out that appropriate actions may be considered going forward. The U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby on Thursday called on the Gabon security forces to respect the constitutionally guaranteed rights of all Gabonese citizens and of all residents of Gabon.
We've been very clear. We don't want to see anybody illegally or unjustifiably detained. We'd want the release of anybody who is being illegally detained or jailed for freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, being part of a political discord. We are encouraging the government of Gabon to release the individual polling station results. We are asking that the legal procedures for certification of the results be followed according to Gabonese law in a fair and transparent.
U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby. Meanwhile, a security message was issued on Thursday by the U.S. Embassy in Libreville to inform American citizens of widespread violent demonstrations, rioting and looting, and asked Americans to remain in safe locations. Government officials say at least one person was killed and 19 others injured. Opposition leader Jean Ping said earlier that two had been killed. Ping is disputing the official election results that showed him losing by about 5,000 votes to Bongo. He said his campaign has evidence the election was rigged and plans to present it to the Gabon's Constitutional Court. At issue are the results from one province where the results show nearly 100% voter turnout, with Bongo receiving 95% of the votes. Some members of the Electoral Commission resigned as results were announced on Wednesday. The French government, a close ally of Gabon, called on the Gabon government to release results of local vote. French Foreign Minister Jean-Marc Ayrault said that, quote, the election results must be perfectly clear and transparent. The turmoil in Gabon comes amid public distrust over the way elections in the country are carried out. That lack of confidence was measured as part of a study by Afrobarometer. It's an independent research network that polls Africans on democracy and governance. Its latest report surveyed public opinion in 36 countries on such questions as trust in their electoral systems and the freedom and fairness of the polls. Peter Penner is a lead author of the study. He's also a distinguished fellow at Michigan State University in the Department of Political Science. Reporter William Ego asked him if he was surprised that among the countries surveyed, Gabonese voters had the least trust in their electoral commissions.
It was a bit surprising that Gabon, unlike many African countries that have some general institutional trust in election institutions, was as low as they were. And in fact, the magnitude, I think what was surprising was that magnitude of how low that trust was, where you have an actual majority of Gabonese, 51%, saying that in late 2015, that CNAP, which is the election commission in Gabon, should not have any trust. They did not have any trust. And in addition, if you add in those that had a little trust, you see that there were 75%, three-fourths of Gabonese saying that they had not at all any trust in the election commission or just a little trust. And this is highly surprising in comparison to others. And it has to do with past experiences in elections in Gabon, most recently their legislative elections in 2011.
And what was it about those elections and the Electoral Commission that led to such great mistrust on the part of the public?
Well, in past elections, there have been major concerns about how elections have been held, you know, the freeness and fairness of elections. And for example, the Afrobarometer study that we're talking about, 37% of citizens saw the 2011 legislative elections as being completely free and fair. That suggests that a lot of people didn't view those elections as fair. And a lot of it had to do with opposition strength in the country that was challenging the current government and people feeling like that opposition was not necessarily getting a fair shake when it came to elections and seriously questioning election quality. Gabon actually ranks last in terms of the level of election quality, looking at that 2011 election, their last election, which we asked about.
What were the findings with regard to voter perceptions of the environment leading up to the polls?
Afrobarometer asked a number of questions about Gabonese and their experiences in the election cycle. You know, the perceptions of that election environment. How often are votes counted freely and fairly, which is an issue right now in terms of the count process. And we find, interestingly, that 71% said that votes are never or only sometimes counted fairly. So again, nearly three-fourths of Gabonese really questioning the vote count, which is right now at issue in the country. In addition, looking at fear and intimidation that may surround the polls, at least two-thirds, 64%, see that they think that violence is at least a little bit there or have experienced it, and 23% have expressed a lot of fear, you know, associated with elections. And these are fairly high numbers of anxiety when it comes to the election process and fear for personal safety and being able to vote freely. Another key piece is, you know, a majority of the citizens, 56%, said that the opposition candidates at least sometimes are prevented from running for office. And in fact, of those, 1 in 5, 22% said this happens often and always. And as we see in a number of elections, Uganda's elections in February and other elections in Africa, but particularly as we're talking about Gabon, the freedom for the opposition to really campaign and to mobilize is a really key factor in achieving an election victory or achieving the freedom of contestation. And we see very high levels of citizens being concerned about the level in which an opposition can really function freely in the country.
Gabon is a member of the Economic Commission of Central African States, or ECOS. Do other surrounding countries, neighbors, have the same problems? And is there any likelihood that a regional organization such as ECOS would step in or impose in the future electoral standards and observation teams so that this type of violence and mistrust does not happen?
Well, you bring up a very interesting point. Regional bodies in Africa have been involved increasingly in election affairs, such as the African Union with long-term observation missions and sub-regional bodies, that is the ECOWAS, ECOWAS's SADC, East African Community, and what we're talking about here is the Central African version, ECAF. And ECAS has been fairly silent over the years on election issues, and a lot of this grows out of the countries that are there and the priorities that they have set, versus countries in ECOWAS, which have sort of begun to raise the bar in terms of election standards. And as ECAS has generally been silent on this issue, it will be very interesting to see whether they act or whether other regional bodies, the African Union, will have something to say, particularly because Jean Ping, who is the actual leader of the opposition, is, in fact, the former chairman of the African Union. So he definitely has some contacts and connections to the regional body as well.
That was Peter Penner, a political scientist and fellow at Michigan State University and a researcher of the Afrobarometer polling group. He was speaking to reporter William Eagle. Three Zambian church groups have called for peace ahead of an anticipated court ruling on the opposition's challenge to the results of the August 11th presidential election. They called on leaders of the opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, and the ruling Patriotic Front, PF Party, to ensure their supporters do not engage in acts of violence after the court's ruling. Many Zambians have expressed concern about the possible clashes between the supporters of the two parties after the court's ruling, which is expected today. In an interview with VOA, Father Cleophas Lungu, General Secretary of the Catholic Bishop Conference, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the church groups have appealed for calm to ensure the country remains peaceful and stable.
The three church mother bodies issued a statement, and in that statement we did make an appeal for people to be calm and to wait patiently for the expected ruling. We also indicated that we are concerned that there has been enough commitment from the political leaders, both from the Patriotic Front as well as the UPND, with regard to accepting the outcome of that ruling. At the end of the day, our interest is the continued stability of the country, the continued peace and harmony in the country, as well as maintaining unity in the country.
Hakainde Hichilema, the main opposition leader whose party has petitioned the court, has called for a meeting with President Edgar Lungu to try to resolve some of these challenges related to violence and all that. He also called on the church to facilitate such a move. Why hasn't this meeting happened so far?
At this point in time, I wouldn't want to issue a statement with regard to that, except to confirm that the church did receive a request for such a meeting and for They seems to be the mediator, and efforts have been ongoing in terms of bringing the two sides together. As for the reason why it doesn't materialize at this point in time, I would wish to keep that to the leaders of the church, who even at this moment in time are seriously engaging with concerned parties.
Well, Father Lungu, accepting the result of an election basically is fundamental to the success or the smooth transition of the electoral process, with pronouncements that you made reference to about some of these political parties unwilling and telling their supporters to reject any outcome if that is not in their favor. Isn't that a recipe for disaster, and that could undermine the country's territorial integrity?
Very right, and that is our concern too. And that's why in the background we have been working, reaching out to all the stakeholders. But also, we have come out in public to make our position very clear that no matter what the outcome is, people on both sides of the political divide in the country should be ready enough and to rise above board and exercise leadership by biting the bullet and accepting, you know, the ruling from the court. And we believe that at this very moment in time, our newly amended constitution is being put to the test, and it is up to our political leaders to show that they believe in the rule of law and not disorder. They believe in peace and not in conflict, but also that they believe in the unity of the country by accepting the ruling of the Constitutional Court.
Father Lungu, what would you say is the Church's message to the people of Zambia, since the Church often provides the moral guide?
Firstly, is to again appeal to the people in Zambia and all the residents to remain calm and peaceful, to avoid taking the law into their hands, and to ensure that we maintain the stability of the country. As for the aftermath of the ruling, we believe that political leaders must, you know, demonstrate that they can translate their words into action by overseeing that their membership, both in PF and UPND, do, you know, respect the rule of law, do respect the outcome of the court. We also believe as church that now is the time for people to avoid talking in such a manner or behaving in such a manner that will provoke people who may be aggrieved by the outcome of the Constitutional Court ruling, and to be sensitive, to be respectful of people with different or divergent views.
As Father Cleophas Lungu is the General Secretary of the Catholic Bishops Conference, he spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Zambia's capital, Lusaka. Human rights activists accuse Syria and Yemen of illegally using cluster munitions in violation of an international treaty. Documented evidence appears in the latest edition of the Cluster Munition Monitor 2016, which tracks the global use, production, stockpiling, and trade of these banned weapons. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The Cluster Munition Monitor has recorded the use of such ordnance by Syrian government forces since mid-2012. It also has documented the use of ground-launched cluster munitions by Islamic State militants during its advance on the city of Kobani a couple of years ago. Human Rights Watch Advocacy Director and Editor of the Monitor, Mary Wareham, says attacks in Syria involving these weapons have increased since Russia began its joint military operation with that country at the end of last September.
We have seen an increase in the number of cluster munition attacks on opposition-held areas in Aleppo, Idlib, and elsewhere. And at the moment, we see evidence of cluster munition attacks every week, if not almost every day, which is highly disturbing.
The Monitor reports about 13 different types of airdropped and ground-launched cluster munitions are being used in Syria. It says all but one have been manufactured by the former Soviet Union or by Russia, but none since 1992. It reports there also is clear and compelling evidence that such weaponry continues to be used in Yemen. The Monitor records at least 19 attacks involving at least 7 different types of airdropped and ground-launched cluster munitions. Wareham says many civilians have been harmed by these weapons since the Saudi Arabian coalition began its air operation against the Houthi rebels at the end of March 2015, breaching an agreement with the United States.
The Saudis specifically agreed as part of the transfer deal with the United States not to use them in civilian areas, only to use them against military targets. And we found evidence that the Saudi Arabia coalition was using cluster munitions in civilian areas. Probably one of the best examples of that was the attack on the capital, Sana'a, in January of this year.
Wareham says the Obama administration in May announced it was halting the sale of such ordnance to Saudi Arabia, apparently in response to the large number of civilians reportedly being killed and maimed by their use. Most casualties reported last year from cluster munitions were in Syria and Yemen. The Monitor, which recorded 245 casualties in Syria and 104 in Yemen, says these figures are underestimated. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabwe's government has banned protests in the capital, Harare, for the next 2 weeks. Sebastian Mofu reports that the ban was announced the day before opposition parties were to hold an anti-government demonstration.
Immediately after the release of the statutory ban, which says anyone who organizes a protest may be sentenced to up to 12 months in prison, opposition parties issued a statement postponing a planned Friday protest by 2 weeks. In a telephone interview, Tabita Kumalo, a spokeswoman of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's MDC party, said her party and others are saddened by the banning of the protests in Zimbabwe. Kumalo said the opposition had no time to challenge the ban before the now aborted Friday march.
It's in violation of the Zimbabwean constitution, which gives every Zimbabwean the right to express themselves. Anyway, their ban does not mean that they are stopping the wheels of the struggle, because the socio-economic problems that are affecting Zimbabweans are still there. It will not create jobs. It will not turn around the economy.
In the past 2 months, Zimbabwe has been hit by a wave of protests against President Robert Mugabe's government. Zimbabweans have been calling for the 92-year-old leader to embark on democratic reforms and fix the country's moribund economy or step down. But police have reacted with a heavy hand to the protests, arresting demonstrators and firing tear gas and water cannons that have resulted in injuries. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that's it for this Friday, September 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again on Monday for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing all of you a good Friday.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, choosing the hero, my improbable journey, and the rise of Africa's first woman president. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize winner and president of Liberia, is a subject of a new book by River Levinson, an in-depth discussion on the life and career of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight, comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.